This is the Steve Cochran Show.
If you start getting into a situation in which the process of appointing judges is so broken, so partisan, that a eminently qualified jurist cannot even get a hearing, then we are going to see the kinds of sharp partisan polarization that have come to characterize our electoral politics seeping entirely into the judicial system. And erodes the institutional integrity of the judicial branch.
You know, the Founding Fathers came up with a pretty good plan. Worked out okay. United States of America running pretty well. Pretty well. Most of the time. Three separate but equal branches. You can't have one branch more important than the other, one branch holding power over the other. And what the Republican Party and the Republican senators particularly have been trying to pull is just nonsense. We'll get to all of that in a second with Senator Durbin. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Nice to see you.
Looks like opening day outside.
I don't know how the White Sox are going to play in this slop.
They're going to have to shovel their way to first base.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mother Nature seriously has some sort of hormonal imbalance going on because she's cranky. Before we get to any of that, you talked about opioid abuse this week, and this is a big problem. You know, we saw a funky commercial on the Super Bowl everybody made fun of, but this is a big deal.
Steve, there isn't a town in Illinois too small or a suburb too wealthy to be spared from this. Heroin overdose deaths, tragic overdose deaths on a daily basis. This week in Springfield, Illinois, a friend of mine lost his daughter. Ugh. Who was a mother of two. And it is just a tragedy that is unfolding. Here's where it starts. Last year, the pharmaceutical industry produced 14 billion opioid pills. 14 billion. Enough for a one-month prescription for every adult in America. Way beyond what's needed for pain management. And so now they're flooding the market with opioids because they've become, frankly, the currency on the street.
So what do you do about it legislatively?
Well, you start with the pharmaceutical industry accepting some responsibility. Secondly, the medical profession. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of excuses. Oh, we want our patients to feel good. Is that why you gave them 50 opioid pills to take home when they may have needed five? It's so you won't get called on the weekend many times. And I think, frankly, they accept some responsibility. Pharmacies do as well. The good news, if there is any, is the fact that this heroin epidemic, now stretching way beyond the inner city, all over our state, has become a universal cause. It's no longer an inner city issue. And we're not talking about drug addiction in terms of moral culpability. We're talking about it as a medical disease.
Well, part of the reason is from the North Shore to Naperville to every alleged affluent suburb there is, you've got severe heroin problems.
And let me add another thing here. Luckily, two senators, Paul Wellstone and Pete Domenici, Democrat and Republican, fought to make sure that every health insurance policy under the Affordable Care Act now covers mental health counseling as
crucial.
Well as treatment for those who are addicted.
Absolutely crucial.
And that is a dramatic increase in opportunity for families to take a child or a loved one who's facing this addiction and bring them into professional treatment.
Well, I keep hearing that the pharmaceutical lobby is almost as big and as angry as the NRA. True or not true?
True. Very true.
So how do you handle that?
And they're very sophisticated. And we're living in a world of super PACs where they are very generous because they're very profitable and they have friends in high places. But look at what's happening to our country. I mean, if I go to Dixon, Illinois, which I visited a few months ago, and look at what they faced there after two local teenagers died, they finally said, we've got to do something
right.
In our little 16,000 population town. And so they adopted a policy out of Gloucester, Massachusetts, where the chief of police said, we're not going to arrest you if you walk in and say you've got a problem. We're going to send you to treatment. 28 people walked in the next week or 10 days into that police department in Dixon, Illinois, and were sent to treatment. You know what happened next? The jail was empty. It was empty because all the petty crime to support a drug addict disappeared.
Yeah, because it is an industry.
It is.
It's an industry with
and
multiple levels.
It's an expensive
levels.
Industry for an addict. They've got to come up with revenue every single day.
The doctors that you've spoken to or the people that you spoke to in the medical side of this, the provider side, Does it appear to be an overprescription problem for the majority of doctors, or is it a small segment that's doing it?
I don't want to generalize, but I'll tell you first that pain management is a relatively new concept. When was the first time you went into a hospital or doctor's office and looked up and saw that chart of smiling and frown faces, and they said, well, how do you feel on this chart?
Yeah.
That's when we started thinking about pain management, which is a very, very important thing that we get right.
Sure.
There are people who are in chronic pain who need
right.
help all the time, every single day.
Right.
But giving a whole, you know, I had my knee fixed in a surgery a few years ago. Loretta was cleaning out the bathroom. She said, you've still got 50 of these OxyContin
You didn't want to take
or
them.
What? And I said, what am I going to do with? I didn't take any of them.
Could have sent them to Rush Limbaugh at that point.
Please.
I'm not helping.
Political opportunities.
Not helping you. Sorry, I'm not helping you. It's an important message, and people need to take action on it as well.
And
is there a particular bill that we need to support,
well,
or is it too early?
First, we've got to expand the opportunities for beds to treat those who are addicted. Haymarket is an amazing operation right here in Chicago, and there are many just like it. And our laws confine or restrict them in terms of the beds that they can make available.
When we come back, I want to talk to you about the campaign and whether or not Hillary, and you said something very funny last time you were in. I don't know if you remember this, but we were talking about Bernie, and Senator Durbin said there's nothing he's screaming about. He hasn't been screaming at me at lunch about for years. But whether or not Bernie and Hillary are going to turn into Trump and company because the Democrats got loud this week. So we'll see where that's going to go. And then I want to ask you about Merrick Garland, because this is not a pet issue for me. This is just absolute nonsense, the way the Republicans in the Senate have handled this, with the exception of Mark Kirk and a few others.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
And she is, through her super PAC, taking tens of millions of dollars in special interest funds. Let me just say in response to Secretary Clinton, I don't believe that she is qualified.
You know, I got Senator Durbin's here. Bernie Sanders has run largely a pretty smart campaign for a guy who didn't make a lot of noise in the House and hasn't gotten a lot done in the Senate. I mean, sorry, it's true. But he's gotten a lot done as a presidential candidate. But this week, it feels like the wheels have come off.
Well, it's crunch time. And there's a real question of credibility in terms of whether you can finish and whether you can win.
Right.
And so the rhetoric's been heated up a little bit in the course of this week. I don't think we're quite to the level of the other party.
Getting closer.
Praise the Lord. And I hope we don't reach it. But, yes, it's a little – there's more tension.
There's plenty of things you can criticize both Clintons for, but you can't say that she's not qualified. She may be the most qualified candidate in my lifetime.
Well, it started with an interview on television on Morning Joe where Hillary Clinton was asked the same question. Is Bernie Sanders qualified to be president? And instead of saying yes, she gave a good answer, a good political answer, said let the people decide, let the voters decide. And Bernie thought that raised a question about his qualifications, so he questioned her qualifications, and that's how the exchange got started.
That's when it turns into the 12-year-old Donald Trump answer.
A little too much of
it. He started it. No, you started it.
Yeah, a little too much of it. But I here's what I'm hoping for, obviously, on the Democratic side, is that when it's all said and done, the sharp contrast between the Democratic nominee and the Republican nominee will bring our folks home. I know there's a lot of emotions, and people feel very intense at this moment. But come July, come August, the choice will be clear.
The argument on the Republican side is that if Trump's not the nominee, there's going to be lots of trouble. And the base is blown up. And, well, the party's a mess to begin with. But having said that, you've got a huge groundswell of support for Bernie Sanders. And whether or not she has any place for him in her administration if she were to win. And, by the way, we asked her that on the show, and she said she absolutely would, you know, want to hear from him and have him have a voice.
Sure.
It does seem like he's brought up a lot of good ideas in big picture form that ought to be used. Is she going to be likely to take those beyond, Election Day?
Well, the interesting thing and a point that was made by the president yesterday is there are so many fundamentals that they agree on when it gets down to it. You know,
right.
There's only one major political party in the world today that denies climate change, the Republican Party of the United States of America. And so there's no question on our side that we are facing some serious changes in our world that need to be addressed honestly. When it comes to education, when it comes to health care, when it comes to basic human rights and civil rights, you know, there is a meeting of the minds on the Democratic side, even though there are a lot of differences on day-to-day campaigning.
Right.
So I think there is a good basis for unifying afterwards, and I really believe President Obama may play an important role in that.
That's what I think we've seen, too, Senator, is that with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders both calling each other to congratulate each other on their various primary victories, we don't see that within the Republican Party. Are the Democrats in Washington kind of watching the GOP unravel during all of this?
Yes, and I can tell you that a lot of Republican senators are looking at their shoes. They don't know what to do next. I can tell you that Ted Cruz of Texas is the most unpopular senator among Republicans.
Why? But unpopular why? Because I know why I don't like him. I mean, he makes my skin crawl. I don't like what he stands for. I don't like what he says. I don't like who he hangs out with. But I also don't like the attitude. And I don't like the way people who are even close to him associate with him. You guys who work with him every day, why is he so unpopular?
Because the senators know him. They've watched him.
So it's like working with anybody. If there's somebody you work with this morning at work and it's somebody you don't like them because you work with them.
It's not one bad day. It is a pattern of conduct.
Right.
He literally shut down the government of the United States of America so he could read Dr. Seuss on the floor and draw the spotlight. And when he tried to explain it, I've talked to Republican senators. He tried to explain in his Republican Senate caucus why he was doing it. They said, Mr. Cruz, you don't even understand the procedures of the Senate.
Right.
We are not going to ultimately vote on the Affordable Care Act. You're going to lose and we're going to look bad. He said, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's
why, didn't care. Made it about him.
That's exactly right. And that's why all but one of the Republican senators, I guess two now, walked away from him. They just don't have any confidence in his style of leadership and don't believe he'd be a good president.
The judge, Merrick Garland, is eminently qualified for the Supreme Court. He's tanned, he's rested, and he's ready. And there is a system that the forefathers are smart enough to put into play, which is fair. It's time-tested, and it ought to be used. The Senate Judicial Committee gives them a fair hearing, and then the Senate, which is still controlled by the Republicans, go ahead and vote. Why are they afraid to do that?
They're afraid to do it because he's hard to ignore and he's hard to vote against. He has such an outstanding record. But even before his name was announced, they said to this president, you don't get a fourth year in this presidency. You may have won by 5 million votes and thought you had a four-year term, but it's actually 3 years and 2 months. You're finished.
It's the biggest, it's the most asinine argument I've seen anybody put forward.
And Steve, let me tell you, and it's rare that a politician will go this far out on a limb, and I'm going out on it right now. We have never, underline the word never, in the history of the United States, denied a presidential nominee a hearing and a vote. Never. Never. And when Ronald Reagan, Republican president, had a vacancy on the Supreme Court in his last year as president, Anthony Kennedy, he ended up submitting that to the democratically controlled Senate, which unanimously approved that nomination by Ronald Reagan and sent Kennedy to the Supreme Court.
One of the exceptions to the partisanship is your colleague, Senator Mark Kirk. And I always marvel, and we've discussed this before, too, at how you two have managed to work together across party lines for the betterment of the state. And Mark Kirk was one of the first Republicans and one of the few to meet with Merrick Garland.
It's true. And Susan Collins of Maine. Mm-hmm. And the two of them are exceptions. And I don't understand this because when these Republican senators go home and face town meetings, a colleague of mine in Kansas just went through this, and people are saying, well, you know, why aren't you fair? Why don't you give this guy a hearing? You can vote against him, but for goodness sakes, you won't. Some people won't meet with him, and others won't give him a hearing.
It's ridiculous.
It is bad. They're going
to
answer for it.
If you take it beyond Election Day and the Republicans somehow manage to maintain control of the Senate and there's a Democrat in the White House, what changes?
Well, I'm not sure. And that, of course, is up to the voters. They've have to decide what they want the Senate to look like and basically how they want the Supreme Court to be created for a generation to come. And that's what elections are all about.
Well, the other thing that's patently offensive about the entire thing is the idea that you wouldn't meet with Merrick Garland is based in this notion that he is some wild judge who is going to rule specifically liberally on every case that comes across his desk. Which is an assault on his integrity and a completely unfair process as well. It's like me calling you a liar without knowing you. They haven't sat down with him to have any of those discussions to even show that he's had a pattern of that.
And, of course, he has a record. And the record, the president chose him not to make a play for the November vote, but really to say, I'm going to send a person that you can't say no to.
Right.
You know, this person really is going to meet the test. And I met with him the other day. What a nice person. I mean, grew up in the Lincoln Woods, Skokie area. We talked about his family background. You know, his mom and dad, their idea of a big vacation, let's get in the car and go to Starved Rock. I mean, that was their idea of a big adventure. It kind of tells you a story about the home they grew up in, the circumstances, the values. He's an exceptional person.
Is he disappointed by this, and would he at some point withdraw his name, or is he in it for the long haul?
I think he's in it, and I think the president had to sit down with him and look him straight in the eye and say, my friend, we're in for a rocky road here,
right.
If you're willing to travel it. And here he's chief judge of the D.C. Circuit Court, which is the second highest court of the land, so he has a fallback position, that's for sure. But, you know, hats off to him. He said, I'll go through this process, and it's a tough one.
I don't even know if this is a question you can answer in short form or without me dozing off, because it involves Senate rules and policies and things. But, you know, I'm no fan of Harry Reid and the outgoing Senator Harry Reid, but he does have some powers that he could execute, including, as I understand it, and tell me if I'm wrong, there's a narrow option that he could put into play that could force a hearing. Is that true or not true?
No, I don't know about forcing a hearing. There's been a question about discharging the nomination from committee without a hearing.
Okay.
That's been proffered, and we're not jumping at that. We think a hearing is the right way to go, and to bring a nominee to the floor without a hearing would be unprecedented and would raise a question as to, well, what do you know about him? What has he said? Put him under oath. Ask the hard questions.
And you still get the hearings. You still get the vote.
Absolutely. And if the Republicans decide to a person they're going to vote against him, so be it.
Yeah,
I don't like
the consequences.
But, you know, that is an outcome which is constitutional.
And it comes down to the thing we always tell you, the power remains with the people. That part of the system still works, whether it's Springfield and the mess here or in Washington and the election in November, at a time where you all feel apathetic and feel like you can't change things. The only way you can change things is to show up and vote.
Absolutely.
So, nice to see you.
Good seeing you, too.
Enjoy the weekend.
Bring your snow boots to open day.
I will.
We'll talk a little more politics with my old friend Nick Zitzen coming up, and also this hour, Aaron Kotursky from ABC News, about a story out of, was it Florida? There's a story coming up that you're going to love that you got to hear before 10 o'clock and week break for the weekend. Let's take that break. Come back with the news next. You can, of course, see whatever Senator Durbin is doing at his website, durbin.senate.gov.
There you go.
Huh? And people thought I was slipping. Also at Senator Durbin on social media. More in a moment.